Welcome back to Uprising. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. Workers in cities all over the nation are plagued by low wages and job insecurity, and they've been fighting back for higher wages and the right to a union. It should surprise us, however, that even in the nation's capital, and even among those workers who directly serve elected officials and policymakers, wages are so low that the spark of organizing has been lit. 600 workers employed by federal contractors who make and serve food for U.S. senators and do other jobs walked off their jobs last week. They were joined by more than 30 Senate employees, including members of the Senate Progressive Caucus. Private companies now dominate the service landscape in Washington, D.C. for government officials and aides. A cashier named Pamela told the Campaign for America's Future that she makes only $12 an hour and is not allowed to work full-time. More than 10 years ago, when she worked at the Senate, she made $48,000 a year. The shocking difference symbolizes the impact of privatization in D.C., which has strived to maximize profits at the expense of workers' lives. Joining me now is Paco Fabian. He's a spokesperson for Good Jobs Nation, a project of the Labor Federation Change to Win. Welcome to Uprising, Paco.
Thank you for having me. Pleasure to be here.
Now, who exactly walked out last week? Can you explain which workers participated, what industry they're in, who they serve, who they work for, et cetera?
So the Good Jobs Nation campaign is a campaign of low-wage federal contract workers. These are workers who work in federal buildings all over the Washington, D.C. area. They work at places like Union Station, like the Ronald Reagan Federal Building, as well as some of the workers from the Capitol, and as you so mentioned, the workers from the U.S. Senate. So these are workers that are touched by the way the federal government does business in the private sector.
And last week's walkout, I understand, was not the first time that workers who are employed by federal contractors in D.C. Walked out. I understand it was the first time, I think, that food service workers and janitors joined in. Are these walkouts growing?
So this was the 12th strike that workers have been participating in, and it was the first time that we had Senate workers participate. These are workers that clean and serve food inside the Senate office buildings. Previously, we've had, like I mentioned, workers from the Capitol Visitor Center, which is the basement of the U.S. Capitol building, and workers in other federal buildings across Washington, D.C. go on strike. And it's really symbolic of the role that the federal government plays in the growing income inequality that we're seeing in our country.
So let's talk about why so many services for Congress and Capitol Hill have been privatized in the first place. I understand this goes back to a 2008 ruling or vote.
So the workers in the Senate in particular used to be federal employees. As you mentioned, Pamela used to have a pension. She used to earn a living wage. She was able to afford a house. But in 2008, those services were privatized, meaning the workers were moved off of the government roles, if you will, and a private company called Compass Group became the contractor for those jobs. They lost their pension, they lost their health benefits, and now they're earning anywhere between $11 and $13 an hour. They're not allowed to work full time. And you can imagine it's a much harder struggle for them than it was when they were actual government employees.
And this is so symbolic of the standard argument that business interests and those politicians that are influenced by corporate profits constantly trot out that if you privatize, things are more efficient. They might be more efficient in terms of generating profits, but the impact that they have on workers is pretty detrimental. Efficient when it comes to workers' salary simply means lower salaries and much harder life for workers, right?
That's right. And look, across the country, we have around 2 million workers that are doing work under government contract. They work on direct government contracts, loans, leases, concessions, all this funded by taxpayer dollars. And about 70% of them rely on some sort of public assistance to make ends meet. 88% of them are people of color. 60% are women. So this is disproportionately affecting some of the most vulnerable communities in our country. And it's being paid for with taxpayer dollars. And taxpayers are actually paying twice for these contracts. They're paying once for the contract itself, and then a second time for all the public services that these workers have to rely on in order to make ends meet. So it's costing taxpayers twice. It's no longer more efficient to privatize, it's actually costing us more than it should.
And of course, money going into the pockets of corporate CEOs rather than than taxpayers who are
That's right.
among those people who are working, who are employed by the government. So the CNN is reporting that late last Friday, the Senate Democrats saw a report that CNN did about a man named Charles Gladden, who works at the Senate. He's so poor that he's homeless, even though he's actually earning money at the Senate. And the senators were so appalled that they promised that they are going to work towards getting a pay raise for Gladden and his fellow workers. Can you tell us a little bit about this? Is this a victory for Senate Democrats to respond to such news?
Well, look, it's very encouraging that Senate Democrats are responding to what's going on in their own buildings. But the truth is, workers are going on strike not just to increase their wages, but they also want the ability to form unions. They want to be able to sit down at the table with their employers and negotiate this on their own.
Right.
It would be great for them to be able to do that without having to have intervention from senators to make it happen. Again, it's very encouraging that senators are taking note of this. It's great that they're writing a letter to the architect of the Capitol, trying to get raises for these workers, but it's more than just about raises. It's about the ability of workers to be able to empower themselves, have a say in their workplace, and be able to negotiate not only wages, but also benefits, time off, fair scheduling, and all the issues that are affecting low-wage workers across the country.
Paco, I think you really hit the nail on the head there, which is that it's nice for workers to get some charity attention from the people that they serve, but in the end, it's better if they can use their own bargaining power to negotiate for themselves, to lobby for themselves. So, how close? What is the prospect of these workers who, as you mentioned, now have had their 12th walkout? What's the likelihood that they could actually win a union?
Well, look,
Or win the
you know,
right to
as
unionize.
right, as you know, it's a very hard process. The
Yeah.
deck is certainly stacked against the workers when it comes to collective bargaining and having the ability to do so with their employers. But look, I think we're in a moment right now where, if you look at the way that the middle class was built in this country, it was built by workers having an ability to form unions and negotiate with their employers. That created the largest middle class that the world has ever seen. Over the last 30 or 40 years, we've seen that middle class sort of start to crumble and disappear. And if we want to rebuild it, I think workers need to have the ability to form unions. And there's no better way to do that than to have politicians in this country lead by example, right? We have six or so candidates in the Senate that are trying to succeed President Obama at the White House. These are the same folks that are in. The workers that have gone on strike are serving these folks and cleaning up after these folks every day. So if they can't help the workers that they see every day, who are they going to be able to help?
Now, about a year and a half ago, Good Jobs Nation, your organization, won a victory for food service workers at two Smithsonian museums in Washington, D.C., and they won this after a series of strikes and one-day marches. What sort of victory did they win, and does this prove that organized action can have some effect?
Well, look, the workers in the Smithsonian Museums, with the exception of the Air and Space Museum, are all now covered by a union contract, which is great. Now they have the ability to negotiate
And
raises and benefits.
this happened from their from something that happened 2 years ago.
So what happened is the workers at the Smithsonian Museum of Natural History and the newest Smithsonian Museum, which is the Museum of the American Indian, is what it's called, did not previously have union representation. After those workers went on strike a couple of times, their company made the right decision. They decided that it was much more in their interest to have their workers be productive and be happy. And the way that they I thought this would work was for them to have a union. And so the only museum now on the National Mall that does not have union representation is the Smithsonian Air and Space Museum when it comes to food service. And the reason is that museum is serviced by McDonald's. So McDonald's is the only food outlet on the National Mall that does not allow their workers to unionize. But it happened because workers, raised their voices and went on strike and took risks, frankly, to make it happen. And so it's encouraging that this has happened. It's encouraging that, workers on the House side of the Capitol are unionized, but not on the Senate side. So the possibility is certainly there. and workers are hoping to be able to get there sooner rather than later.
And we know that workers who are unionized have higher wages, they have benefits because they're able to bargain for those, negotiate and leverage their their work and their effort and labor to get those, right? I mean, it's a pretty clear correlation, isn't it?
Absolutely. I think, if you look at hourly wages, a unionized worker tends to make, $2 or $3 more than a non-unionized worker does. There's certainly a benefit to workers. And look, there's plenty of companies that are also very profitable and allow their workers to form unions. You can look at examples like Costco, and others. So, ultimately, it's a choice, right? You either, want to make a lot of money and disrespect your employees, or you can make a lot of money and make your employees happy, more productive, members of and sharing in the profits that they're helping to create. So there's plenty of examples out there of good, profitable companies that have unions, and it seems to be a harmonized relationship.
Now, Paco, let's talk about what President Obama has and hasn't done. The Progressive Caucus lobbied Obama, with, of course, the agitation of workers to back them up, to sign two executive orders to improve working conditions for federal contract workers. The Good Jobs Executive Order prevents employers who commit wage theft from receiving government contracts. And then a previous order signed by Obama raised the minimum wage to $10.10 for federal contract workers. And certainly, the president seems responsive to contract workers. But could he do a lot better?
Absolutely. Look, I mean, 10-10 is a good start, and preventing companies that engage in wage theft or other legal violations from receiving taxpayer dollars is also a good start. But workers need more than the minimum, right? Workers need the ability to form unions. What workers are asking for now is for the president to sign a model employer executive order where preference is given to companies that pay at least $15 an hour and allow their workers to form unions, pay benefits, and et cetera. The president likes to talk about how the federal government is a model employer. Well, the federal government then should also do business with companies that are model employers, that treat their employees with respect, that allow them to bargain, that pay decent wages, provide benefits. And as we've mentioned before, these companies can also be very profitable.
And so you're saying that this is an executive order that the president could sign to pledge the government will do business with companies that pay their workers 15 an hour. This is something he could do with a stroke of a pen, does not even require congressional support?
That's right. I mean, just like his 10-10 executive order did not require congressional support, and like the Fair and Safe Workplaces executive order did not require congressional approval, he could do an order that does this, that then brings close to 2 million workers closer to being able to live the lives that they want to live.
Paco Fabian, what is the link between this movement in the nation's capital and the broad national movement for better jobs, higher wages, and the right to a union? There is a huge movement now that has really sprung up just in the last few years, around the same time that the movement that you're working on is the Fight for 15 campaign of fast food workers and Walmart workers. Are these movements aligned? Are they working together?
Look, I think workers across all the industries you just mentioned, fast food, retail, and even federal contracting, are facing the same issues. And as a result, I think, they're all raising their voices and calling for similar solutions. So the truth is, as the economy has recovered in recent years, that recovery hasn't really been seen by workers, right? We lost a lot of decent middle-wage jobs during the last recession. And those jobs have been replaced by low-wage service jobs, retail jobs, and federal contract jobs. And certainly, I think there's a link in that, workers are facing similar issues and asking for similar solutions.
So you're saying that there is no explicit coordination?
Well, look, I think, there's certainly coordination when it comes to asking for what the workers are asking for, but these are very separate campaigns with separate targets, right? Although you could argue that all these workers, like I mentioned, are facing the same sort of issues. So it almost seems like a natural fit that they would be asking for similar solutions. But look, there's a fast food campaign, there's a Walmart campaign, they're all separate campaigns, but certainly again, the workers are facing similar issues and asking for similar solutions. So in that sense, I think, we have had, federal contract workers speak with some of the fast food workers, for example, retail workers that have spoken to fast food workers and others. There certainly is, I think, a level of solidarity between them.
Right.
And I think that has helped raise this issue across the
And of
country.
course, the difference is that federal contract workers are paid by federal tax dollars, and the other industries that many of these folks are fighting for higher wages in are private industries that
That's
don't
correct.
necessarily have government contracts, although some might. So
That's right.
finally, Paco, where can our audience find out more information about the campaign that you're working on with federal workers? Is there a website and other ways to support it?
Absolutely. So you can go visit www.goodjobsnation.org, which is where you'll find sort of the most comprehensive information about the campaign, what the workers are asking for, and some of the issues that federal contract workers are facing. You can also follow Good Jobs Nation on Twitter and check out our Facebook page at Good Jobs Nation. You can find out information there about some of the latest stories that have come out regarding workers. You mentioned Charles Gladden and others. And hopefully there you can like our page, support what the workers are doing, and really take a look. If you're listening as a taxpayer, do you want your money to be used to keep workers in poverty, or would you rather it be used to create good jobs?
And that's goodjobsnation.org. If you missed it, we'll post it to our website, uprisingwithsonali.com, later today. Paco, thanks so much for joining us. Best of luck to you.
Thank you, and thank you for having me.
My guest, Paco Fabian, is a spokesperson for Good Jobs Nation. It's a project of the Labor Federation Change to Win.